As we've seen, while C.K. Blunden's expansion of the paper company, including the installation of the number 3 machine, had greatly benefited Grand Rapids, easing the town through the turmoil of the Depression, it had not been successful in shielding the company from the effects of the Great Depression. And try as he might, Blunden found it quite impossible to earn any kind of profit. But even as he was doing that, he was facing a new challenge, which he regarded as a very serious one. When the strike in 1921 was broken, bringing in workers from the outside and costing many of the paper company employees to lose their job, unionized representation at the paper mill in Grand Rapids had come to an end. Blunden authorized procedures whereby the employees of each department elected delegates to meet with management at set times. Primarily, discussion at those meetings centered on specific employee grievances. In the words of Bruce Erskine, a longtime mill worker, the system worked after a fashion, but was not really satisfactory. But yet, Charles Blunden always played his paternalistic role extremely well. He once wrote to Lawrence Rossman of his firm conviction that the obligation for peaceful and satisfactory conditions rests primarily upon the employer, followed by appreciation by the employees, and backed by the cooperation and favorable sentiment of the people living in the community. Wages, benefits, and working conditions were acceptable to prevent widespread discontent among the mill workers, and the delegate system was not seriously challenged. Then, in 1935, passage of the Wagner Act considerably strengthened the national labor union movement. The act established federal backing for the cause of militant labor by prohibiting employer interference with the right of employees to unionize and to organize collective bargaining to further prohibit discrimination of any sort against union members. The big unions began a widespread drive to increase membership and embrace non-unionized companies. By 1937, as Bruce Erskine noted, we could see the handwriting on the wall. National or international unions were going to move in. The employees of the Blunden Paper Company gathered at the Grand Rapids City Hall to discuss union possibilities. As a preliminary action, Erskine was sent to confer with union members of the Northwest Paper Company, where an American Federation of Labor contract had recently been negotiated. The two men were to find out what the AFL had to offer. To Charles Blunden, with his deep-seated antipathy toward the large organized unions, the prospect of AFL or CIO affiliation with his company was most unsettling. He wrote a confidential letter to prominent Grand Rapids businessman Frank King, setting forth some thoughts entertained while driving down to St. Paul. Blunden stated, "We do not think we shall have any trouble with our employees at the paper mill, but nobody ought to be sure of the situation today. I feel confident that if our men are left alone, we will have very little cause to feel apprehension over any trouble." He pointed out that in the past he had dealt with union representation with very little difficulty. Despite his statement, though, Blunden was apprehensive. He mentioned the possibility of the arrival of outsiders who would make it their business to come into a community like Grand Rapids and create trouble and unrest. Blunden told King he would continue to pay the best wages possible, but he pointed out that there were certain limits of expense beyond which the mill would not be able to continue operation. Noting the importance of the paper mill to Grand Rapids, Blunden suggested that the moral influence of King and other businessmen and citizens might create an influence that would discourage bringing about a condition that could be detrimental to people in Itasca County. Blunden concluded by pointing out that with assistance from King and others, Grand Rapids could perhaps become the one exception in the country that is not dominated by sinister outside influences. Well, Blunden sent a copy of his letter to Lawrence Rossman, who responded by publishing in the Herald Review an editorial titled The Necessity of Profit. Fearing that national union representation might encourage the mill workers in Grand Rapids to demand more than the company could afford to pay, Rossman cautioned company employees to consider what had happened in paper mills elsewhere. A company in receivership, he said, is not a good guarantee to labor or to the community. In the meantime, the mill employees met with representatives of both the AFL and the CIO. Erskine had returned from his visit to Cloquet with a copy of the AFL union constitution accepted by the employees of the Northwest Paper Company, and the document was thoroughly analyzed and discussed. Then, at another session at the City Hall, the Blendon workers decided to form their own independent, non-affiliated union. Boy, what a considerable relief to Blendon that was, and as well as to Rossman and the others who shared their perception of the national union organizations. 90% of the mill force immediately joined the new union, and as other workers were contacted, a substantially unanimous membership was expected. The union elected John Inman as president and Bruce Erskine as vice president. Years later, in 1981, Erskine said the main reason for the decision to form an independent union was the strong memory of the AFL papermakers' union role in the strike of 1921. That strike had been costly to many of the mill workers. Soon after the new union formed, President Inman told a Herald Review reporter that employees believed general conditions in the local mill were good and that the men could deal with the company without outside assistance. Inman also told the reporter that the men recognized the fact that employment at the mill had been steady and that conditions in the print paper industry had been extremely unfavorable. The Herald Review reporter wrote, "Mr. Inman is not unmindful of the importance of the paper mill to Grand Rapids and the important effect of industrial peace upon the welfare of the community." Shortly after the formation of the union, an initial 6-month contract was negotiated with the company without difficulty. The contract officially recognized the union and set the pay scale at existing rates. Neither side would condone acts or threats of violence, and neither strikes nor lockouts would be allowed, provisions not generally accepted in AFL or CI negotiations. Early in 1938, the union renewed its contract with the company for another year. But even so, there were potential labor problems. Due to slack sales, employment hours had to be shortened temporarily, and using that as a lever, the AFL and CIO union organizers hoped to win over the Blendon mill workers. Aware that the union representatives were encouraging mill workers to break their local contract and to affiliate nationally, Rossman prepared a statement explaining the position of the Blendon Paper Company to the community. He hoped that Grand Rapids citizens would pressure employees to continue supporting their independent union. The workers were content with their independent union. The national union promoters did not accomplish much in Grand Rapids. Two AFL representatives called for a meeting of Blendon employees. Only 10 people attended, and they took no action. One of the AFL speakers told a reporter from the Herald Review, "Working conditions and rates of pay are apparently satisfactory in the Grand Rapids mill." He said he and his partner would not be back to discuss the matter again in the foreseeable future. Well, what a major victory for Blendon, and what a sigh of relief from him, the independent union he knew he could work with very effectively. Let's consider for a moment a situation in which we have two strong men in close geographic proximity, although not in the same time frame. John C. Greenway had departed from Minnesota 6 years prior to Blandon's purchase of the Itasca Paper Company. The two men never met, and I have never found any indication in going through the papers of both of them that either had ever particularly sought information in regard to the other, or indeed thought anything of the other. Yet each prided himself on keen ability in business administration and management. What they most strongly shared in common was their ability to effectively follow a pattern of paternalism, sharing their strong aversion to unions, both regarding them as interlopers in their business affairs and thinking of the unions as self-serving organizations, often corrupt. Both men followed practices that would reward their employees with wages just a bit higher than the average, good working conditions, retirement plans, health plans, and benefits such as offered in Greenway's model town Coleraine and Blandin's ability to offer similar niceties in Grand Rapids. Surprising to find similar brands of paternalism in close proximity in a remote rural area. And this is not to extol paternalism, which tends to lead to a degree of authoritarianism and does not fit well into a democratic society, but it certainly is an effective way to win employee loyalty, and both men certainly had achieved that. And each very effectively had curbed union activity. The two had other similarities. Both greatly appreciated the Minnesota wilderness, and both prided themselves on their physical fitness. I suppose the biggest difference between them is that Greenway was dedicated to military service and distinction, which Blandin did not share. But certainly, both of them, John C. Greenway and C.K. Blandin, made a strong impact in Itasca County.